When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Thaddeus McCotter, my colleague and co-host, American Greatness. And we're very pleased to welcome Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, to note the passing of Westchester's own Nita Lowey, a longtime member of Congress, leaving us at 87. Malcolm, you want to say what Nita Lowey represented to Westchester and to the people of New York? Good evening to you.
Good evening to both of you, and thank you. Nita Lowey, bless her memory, was a very special person in many regards. I worked with her throughout her entire time in Congress, and she was there, I think, almost 30 years. She rose to being chairman of the Appropriations Committee. She was a strong, devoted, and dedicated Congress member and leader in Congress. She was respected universally. She spoke truth to power, but she also had a most beautiful smile and was reelected by large margins in Westchester because of her devotion to the responsibilities that she had and recognition of the unique post that she filled in Congress, in her community. And I would say in the United States, she was a frequent visitor to Israel. She helped foster the U.S.-Israel relationship, but at the same time, fostered America's presence in many international fora. And as a member of the Foreign Relations Committee and on other positions, she was at the forefront of many vital issues. So she has been missed since she left Congress, and she will certainly be missed. And we send condolences to her husband, Stephen, and to their family. And to the entire community who recognize, mourn her, and loved her.
Hamas, Israel. The news from the Middle East is that the Israeli delegation has left Cairo, and the Hamas delegation is due tomorrow. What is the status of the hostages, Malcolm?
The hostages' status, unfortunately, is status quo. It has not changed. Mr. Witkoff was there. There was a lot of emphasis put in the last week on getting back Inel Alexander, an American Israeli who was being held, who was alive, and four dead American Israelis. The president himself has intervened on it, and certainly Mr. Witkoff has put a pressure on it, but not to separate them from the overall cause and to say that look, if we get them, although there have been offers and negotiations about just doing a limited exchange. But as been pointed out by American officials, these are not really exchanges. When you get 400 terrorists released for three hostages, we know more and more from the hostages that have been released about the conditions under which they've been held. And a lot of the information is not getting out for fear of not endangering the hostages who are still being held. But so inhumane, so barbaric, such torturous existence with getting one piece of pita and sometimes even less, and that the remarkable resilience of the people and how they turn to prayer, turn to other things to strengthen them. And I think that it'll make a great movie one day when it comes out. But in the meantime, unfortunately, they remain there. The negotiating teams are going back and forth in Cairo and Doha. But so far, we have not yet seen the kind of all-out pressure from from Qatar in particular and Egypt to get them to start to give in and to release after almost over 500 days these poor people who have suffered so much.
Thaddeus, you have a question.
Yes, Malcolm, we're seeing the continued deterioration of behavior from Iran, which is not that big of a surprise. And I would like you to comment upon that. But I would also like you to talk about some of the improving signs we're seeing with the Druze community in relation to Israel.
Right. So Iran, we're seeing that the Chinese and the Russians are supporting them. They've had joint talks. As you know, we reported on the joint exercises that they had. It doesn't seem that there was anything very unusual there. They are China and Russia are saying that any talks have to be based on mutual respect. And they talk about the unlawful unilateral sanctions that the United States has placed on them. But clearly, the reimposition of the maximum pressure on Iran is having an effect. And we should understand that the implications of this are very clear. Iran is in dire economic straits. We have talked about the decline of the economy, the lack of electricity, many other things. And of course, they're dependent largely on the trade with China. But as the United States sanctions more and more of the carriers and cracks down on that, I think it will it will have a greater and greater role. Iran has blatantly turned down the U.S. Offer for negotiations, for talks. And the same day Khamenei received a letter from President Trump, he laid out that the talks are a deception. He gave a major address and said the United States and its agents make the wrong moves all the time. Iran's retaliation is decisive. And the one who will lose the most is America. And he's making clear that while Israel is an immediate target, the real target is the United States. And so the U.S. has imposed new sanctions on Iran, and they are having an effect. You see Iran's greater and greater sensitivity to the fact that Azerbaijan is trading with Israel, just made an oil deal with Israel, and criticizes them all the time. Russia has offered to mediate between the United States and Iran. But that so far hasn't taken place. So we're seeing that Iran is digging deeper and deeper. The people are, in Iran are being denied basic needs and functions because of the economic collapse and because of the money being sent to other purposes, including to the Houthis. And the president and others have been very clear in coming down on that. On the Druze issue, which is really a Syrian issue, but impacts Iran as well, because Iran is looking for ways to make inroads in Syria amongst the minority groups there. Turkey, of course, is the dominant force, but the Druze are remarkable people. And three busloads of Druze leaders, especially religious leaders, made their way to Israel, across the border into Israel, were welcomed by the Druze community in Israel, which is about 200,000. In Syria, it's between 700,000 and 800,000. They would like to be associated with Israel in some way. Israel is now offering jobs to Druze to come into Israel to work. The Druze community is a very ancient community. They derive their religious inspiration from Jethro, the father-in-law of Moses, and went to visit his grave in the area. The Houthis have come under very bad attack, as have other minorities. We know what happened with 1,000 Alawites who were killed. We hear that they are still under, they're still being tortured and arrested and people being shot. There was a lot of clashes along the border, which I'm sure we will get to. So the Druze story is really, in a sense, a bright story in this picture, but they are under incredible pressure and live in great fear that the reigning government, ISIS-related government, will again turn on them.
Syria, Malcolm, there is news in all directions about the government, so-called interim government in Damascus, but there is an unknown to me about Qatar. Qatar is very active in negotiations in Cairo, in negotiations in Doha. Its money poured into the Gaza Strip long before the October 7th attack. I'm unfamiliar with Qatar and Syria. What do you know?
Qatar is a major player in Syria, and along with Turkey, both Muslim Brotherhood countries, they are providing economic military support to al-Julani in Damascus. And in exchange, they want control over the Syrian coast. The declaration of a general jihad is going to transform Damascus into a global hub for jihadists. And they say that jihadists from around the world are coming there to target minorities and counter Israeli advances and to bolster Syria and use it as a base. And therefore, and there have been exchanges across the border from Syrian soldiers being kidnapped by Hezbollah on the Lebanese border near Homs, and they were killed on the other side. So then the Syrian National Army started to, which is affiliated with ISIS and with Turkey, and is more numerous than the forces of al-Julani. They responded. There have been firing across the border. And they are the ones who are believed to have committed the massacres against the Alawites. And Qatar is also providing gas to Syria. And one of the ways they're doing it is through Jordan to improve that nation's electricity supply and boost Syria's new rulers. So they go to Aqaba, they bring the gas to Aqaba, and from there pipe it and send it on to Syria. And as you know, Qatar was a leading anti-Assad force in Syria. So we're seeing that the international influence that's coming into there, Israel has continued to work within the security zone. And more people there are looking to Israel and want protection. The minorities want protection from Israel, but it's the international community that now has to step up and assure the security of these communities who make up a large part of the Syrian population.
Just a moment, Malcolm. The Hezbollah is Shia. They crossed the border and kidnapped Syrian National Army, which means HDS or their kindred, who are Sunnis, and then murdered them and wanted the government in Damascus to know. Is this a civil war?
That's an outstanding question, and there are people who have made references to the potential for civil war there. It is not yet a civil war. The al-Julani is trying to get everybody to put their arms under one group, and it's interesting, going back to Thaddeus's question about the Druze, there was a report, which I think we even may have mentioned last week, because it just happened that day, that the Druze, like the Kurds, signed agreements to surrender their weapons under the National Army and to work together, et cetera. It is absolutely untrue. The Druze denied signing any kind of an agreement with them. They don't trust them. They know that this would put them at great risk. And it's the feeling of the Circassians, it's the feeling of the Christians and the others there as well.
Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness. When we come back, there's shooting in the Red Sea, shooting against a ship called the USS Harry Truman. Unwise at any speed. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.